Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us once again on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com, and on the line here with me I have James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. James!
Patrick! What's up?
How are you, my friend?
Pacquiao's back.
Oh, he's so back, it's crazy.
He has risen.
I don't even... Yeah, it's like Easter Sunday all over again. I love it.
Although the latest news was a little troubling about his financial situation, but
yeah, I read about that this morning. Probably not 10 minutes or 15 minutes before the show started here. Got a late start, so I saw that. A little disconcerting.
Whatever it is, it's not good.
It seems that maybe Manny and Floyd have a little bit more in common than they thought, huh?
Well, I think we could have guessed at that.
You know, I feel bad for fighters. I really do. Because they really don't have anybody looking after them in that sense. And I feel bad that they all seem to so badly manage their own finances. You know, I mean, I really have no idea whether or not Manny Pacquiao has, like, a tax attorney or anything like that, but you would think that being one of, you know, the top money earners on the face of the planet in terms of sports, that he would have his finances in better shape. I mean, you would think.
Yeah, I think Boo Boy's a licensed CPA.
Yeah, he's probably also licensed to eat all of his money, too. I mean, but that's just a guess. Jesus.
It doesn't look like he misses many meals.
No, not especially. He basically looks like he's a 18-month-old baby. That's about 4.5 feet tall. So anyway, we have a lot of you know, Macau talk to get out of the way today. What do you think? What do you think about that event there, Foley?
Well, you know, as a whole, I mean, pretty disappointing for $70 price tag. the undercard was pretty terrible, about as bad as we thought it was going to be. I mean, it just depends if you care. You know, I mean, I guess going in, I had such low expectations. I didn't really care. I was just kind of looking forward to the event, having people over, you know, watching Pacquiao and Rios. But from a boxing fan perspective, I mean, it didn't really have anything to offer until the main event. And, you know, it lived down to what we thought about it coming into it. So, I mean, if I'm grading the event, I'm throwing a C- out there.
Yeah, I think that C- is fairly accurate myself. I mean, that was pretty, I don't know what it is with me, because I don't buy
pay-per-views all that often. And then, of course, the ones that I buy, like, they just make absolutely no sense to buy. Why, I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, right, I mean.
But I bought this shit. Why, I really don't know. But, yeah, I mean, of
a situation like this, the only reason you buy it is if you're, like, having people and you just need to have it on the TV. And
no,
you don't want
to. Wanna...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I mean, this is one. Well, you wanted to see it in HD.
Yeah. I was just going to say, of course, I had to buy it in HD, so it's got a $70 price tag over where I'm at. And I've heard that it was more in a few areas and like 75 or something like that, and I mean,
mine was 70, and I was stunned because I mean the standard, I mean they raise it all the time, but you know in the last couple of years it was always like 55 standard, 65 HD, and then Mayweather Canelo was popped up to 75, and I guess the justification was such a huge fight, and we're giving you this awesome undercard with Matisse and Garcia, but what the fuck? Now the pack, this one was 70.
Well, I mean, you know, it's at least with Mayweather Canelo, I could kind of understand it because the size of the event, you know, it was big. You know, there was at least I didn't really think that it would be that competitive like the main event, but at least the entire card itself seemed worth it. You know, and you know, it just seemed like we're paying $70 to see Manny Pacquiao. Now, before the fight, if we were talking about justifying, like, we don't know whether or not he's going to be okay, you know, it could be a really, really good fight, blah, 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 all right, fine. But especially in retrospect, that was rough.
Yeah, well, we didn't know. I mean, you know, it comes down to, is it worth $70 to watch Pacquiao to answer those questions? I mean, because we knew that the undercard was shit.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I wasn't fooled. You know, I was not sold a bill of goods or anything. I just...
Not sold the Billy did.
I was hoping it'd be better. Not at all. Oh, man, I think Andy Ruiz Jr. basically ate that entire undercard. It was bad. Well, anyway, now
poor
that we're
Hamer.
Done bitching about... Yeah, now that we're done bitching about that $70 bill, it's going to be on our cable receipt. The main event, I don't know, sum that up in a word, a couple words or something, I don't know.
I think that you have to look at that, and I'll tell you what was going through my head, and I just a little bit longer here, you know, from kind of like the casual fan mindset, who's not so dismissive of the Pacquiao-Mayweather storyline, even though those that follow boxing, you know, very closely are all pretty much sick of it because it's been going on forever. But, you know, there's this kind of narrative, I think, that's developed among, like, the boxing fan elite that's like, well, Mayweather's obviously proven that he's in a different class than Pacquiao, and, you know, Pacquiao's way past his prime, and he doesn't have the punching power anymore, and, you know, the knockout was the final nail in the coffin, and, you know, so I don't want to see that fight. I'm over it. I want to see what do you want to see? What do you want to see? Mayweather against Amir Khan? Mayweather against, you know, Danny Garcia? I mean, they're good fight. You know, Garcia's a good fighter, but, you know, I watch this fight, and I just think, you know what? Fuck it. I still want to see that because, you know, what Pacquiao showed is the hand speed and the quickness, the foot speed, and just these qualities that have been missing in every Mayweather opponent. And you can't look at the guys he's fought and say that they're better threats than even this version of Pacquiao. You know, you just can't do that. I mean, I thought it was a really impressive performance. I thought it showed that, you know, he is capable of continuing to compete on a high level. You know, you didn't get a definitive answer, I don't think, about quite where his chin was at, because I don't think he was ever really hit clean with a big kind of power shot in that area that would have shown, you know, is this guy just damaged goods. But, he looked great, I thought. And Rios is a tough guy, and it's kind of like this other thing that keeps getting said, well, Pacquiao, why doesn't he doesn't knock anybody out anymore? He doesn't have the same speed and explosiveness. Well, you know, let's look at it. I mean, the only guy he ever really knocked cold at the higher weight was Hatton. And, you know, the other guys he's fought, I mean, they don't get knocked out for the most part. Not Clady and Margarito and Mosley and Rios. I mean, these are tough guys who, you know, and each of those fights was different, but none of those guys get knocked out. Marquez doesn't get knocked out. I mean, you know, he's not fighting the type of fighters. He's not fighting Victor Ortiz. He's not fighting guys like, you know, Ricky Hatton. I mean, all due respect to him. And so I think he does still have, I think the explosiveness and the power, you know, no fighter is what they, you know, at 35, what they were at 30 or at 25. But I think he still has enough of it to make an interesting fight with anybody in the world. And so, yeah, 100%. I mean, if I could make any fight, I would make the Mayweather fight. It's not what it was a few years ago, but it still is, to me, better than any other fight either guy could take.
You know, maybe I'm being too dismissive of that fight myself, and maybe I do need to kind of, like, you know, come back around and give it, like, an actual thought. But of course, you know, the arguments and the bullshit that have been going on for however many years now have just been such a turnoff for me that I, like, you know, I don't even want to entertain the thought of it. But if I kind of set that aside for a bit and think about it, yeah, I mean, if they made that fight, just hypothetically, if they announced 2 weeks from now that they were able to come to terms for that fight and they're going to split the difference and do it like a late April or some shit rather than early May or whatever, am I going to complain? No, I'm not going to complain.
We'd all be,
you know,
hyped up as
well,
fuck.
Well, no, that's not true. I would still complain because I'll complain about anything. But But, yeah, would it make sense as a fight? Would I be like, oh, holy shit, fuck them for making it? No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that. I'd be happy that I guess that it got done at all rather than never.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason it's – okay, I understand, like, it's – okay, it's not worth talking about that extensively because it's probably not going to happen because of all the promotional disputes. I mean, that's a fair argument. But from a pure competitive standpoint, I mean, I just watched Manny Pacquiao in this fight, and I see – I'm just thinking, who else has that kind of hand speed and can throw that kind of combinations? You know, and maybe he did have kind of a different tactical approach, and he wasn't going for the knockout. You know, he was fighting carefully and racking up the points, but he was also landing some big punches and scoring, you know, throughout the entire fight. And, you know, I think Rios – yeah, I mean, he showed his limitations. I mean, I think that the going into it, people kind of describing Rios as being kind of a one-dimensional brawler who comes forward and you know, isn't going to be able to deal with Pacquiao's speed. Well, I mean, they were right to an extent, but you also, you know, I don't want to diminish Rios because I think he's a solid, good fighter who can hang with a lot of guys of those weights. And again, you know, Pacquiao blew him away. Even a kind of tentative Pacquiao, and there was a constant tension because he had just been knocked out of what's going to happen. I mean, he still looks vulnerable, and it wasn't until very late. You know, I mean, our perception of this fight was completely different because he had ended his last fight knocked out. You know, throughout the whole fight, there was suspense.
Indeed.
Because you weren't sure what was going to happen to him. And by the end of it, it was like, okay, wait, this was just another – we just witnessed pretty much a domination, a rout.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at – and then I still go back to that Tim Bradley fight where I thought Pacquiao really, again, outclassed Bradley with his speed and his combination punching and his movement and did enough to that he should have gotten a clear win. And I look what Tim Bradley's done since then. I mean, that's a big win for Manny Pacquiao, too. You know, to see what he does to these guys like Rios and Bradley and to try to argue that he's somehow, like, unworthy of being a Mayweather opponent – when you look at the what Golden Boy's dealing with, for you know, potentially to fight Mayweather in the next couple of years, I think it's ridiculous.
Well,
it won't happen.
Good.
No,
I'm not trying to poke the hornet's nest that is the legion of Floyd Mayweather fans who you know, none of which can spell. No, I didn't. That's not what I meant. But I'm seriously not trying to stir the pot that badly here, but. At the same time, I mean, it just seems to me, on even though I'm not super keen on that fight, there's a track record of it. It didn't just start with Floyd Mayweather. I mean, it's been going on forever in boxing, where if there's a guy who's at the top or towards the top of the heap, and then there's somebody who's presumably below him that they want him to fight, the answer is, well, he beat him anyway, so there's no point. And it's like, yeah, I get that. Okay, I would pick Floyd to win, too. I would have picked Floyd to win probably in 2009 and 2010 as well. You know, there were a lot of people who would have, a lot of people who wouldn't have. Point is, that's why they fight. You know, there's no point in just dismissing it and saying, ah, he'd win anyway. Well, I guess if that's how it's going to be, make the fight and make your $50 million. You know, there's no reason not to, really. So, I mean, if you're looking at the Rios fight in a vacuum, you know, we talked about it last week. You just mentioned it. If you're looking at it in a vacuum and not comparing it to any previous performances or anything like that, you'd probably look at that fight and go, yep, that was an absolute domination of a guy who, yeah, he might be coming off a loss, but it was a, you know, kind of contested loss or a loss where he gave the guy who beat him shit for 12 rounds. That was a good win. It was a very good win, but of course, since he was coming off the knockout, we were waiting to see what would happen when he got hit, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, of course, there's always going to be comparisons to previous versions of Manny Pacquiao, and that version doesn't exist anymore. It's never going to exist after those, you know, singular moments.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like, yeah, the version of Floyd that fought Oscar doesn't exist anymore. You know, the version of Floyd that fought Guerrero doesn't exist anymore. I mean, as time passes, people, you know, athletes change and become, you know, they slow down at the age that those guys are. But I don't, you know, it just, I don't know. A part of the reason I'm kind of annoyed is because the whole talk about Pacquiao slowing down that goes back all the way. I mean, I even heard it after the Margarito fight. I mean, what, you know, I thought he, I thought that was a pretty impressive win. But certainly after the Mosley fight, where, you know, in that fight I thought Pacquiao really, you know, you talk about him being kind of sympathetic to his opponents and taking his foot off the gas. I think the Mosley fight's probably the best example of that. And against Bradley, you know, he fought in spurts. But that whole talk of him kind of like, you know, slowing down, I mean, it's like, yeah, he's slowing down. He's 35 years old, and he's, you know, a 145-pound fighter. But still, I mean, it was enough to win by huge gaps over every opponent. And the only real blemish in recent years, I mean, you had the second Marquez fight, well, like 5 years ago, and then, of course, getting knocked out by Marquez. I don't know. It's just these guys are so polarizing. And, I mean, I get it, too, with Floyd. I mean, it's just kind of like there's always this legion of cynics that want to criticize, like, every, you know, paint, you know, draw the end for them before it's really there. I mean, I think Pacquiao showed here that he's still a viable guy in that weight class and in that division. You know, well, I guess we should talk about kind of what probably will happen, since we're not going to really get Pacquiao Mayweather, because there's just too many people that won't work with each other that would have to be involved in that. But, you know, looking ahead to, like, Pacquiao Bradley, I'm interested in a rematch of that fight. I'm interested in your opinion, but I don't see any reason to think that the first fight doesn't repeat itself.
For Pacquiao Bradley, that is?
Yeah. I mean, if that's fight that top rank does, I think I still got to favor Pacquiao.
It sure seems like if that's not next, then it will be not that far away, assuming that Manny can keep winning. I mean, man, that whole scenario with all those guys is, I mean, even though I like the options, it's kind of when you're trying to figure out who beat who and which win was justified and all that type of shit, it's kind of a clusterfuck. In a good way. In a good way, but it's tedious trying to kind of navigate your way through all those wins and losses there. But if I said it the other day, if they match Manny with Provodnikov, if they match him with Tim Bradley again, if they do a fifth Marquez fight, I mean, count me in, really. Count me in any of those. I'm down to see any of those fights.
Yeah, I am too.
I'd prefer not to go
Provodnikov, but...
I think that might be the least competitive of the bunch, but I don't know. I could be totally off on that. But I forgot to answer part of what you had said about Bradley Pacquiao too, potentially. I would have to say that it's probably still the same fight, and especially when you take into account the fights that Bradley's had since then. You know, fighting, like, knocked out for 11 rounds against Provodnikov, and then... you know, he didn't do very badly or anything like that against Marquez. He didn't take a whole lot of punishment, but he got hit. So I would have to think that it would probably be something similar to a replay anyway.
I think that's kind of what the prevailing wisdom would be going into it, which, again, I think tells you that, you know, and I kind of feel like Pacquiao's somehow gone full circle from being, you know, compared to Henry Armstrong and one of the greatest fighters of all time, which maybe now it's fair to say probably overrated him a little bit, to being underrated, because he would be a favorite against Tim Bradley. Yet how can you not regard Tim Bradley as one of the best fighters, you know, of any weight class, really? I mean, the top 10 guy, and he beat Marquez.
He just, on my card, cleanly beat the guy that totally put Manny Pacquiao to sleep.
Yeah, and I mean, Bradley's accomplished more than any of those potential Mayweather opponents at Golden Boy. You know, I'm not saying ultimately he's a better fighter, because I think a lot of those guys are really talented. But as far as, you know, Danny Garcia and Adrian Broner, or, you know, Keith Thurman or whoever, I mean, Bradley's fought world class guys and has a huge win over Marquez, who at the time, you know, is legitimately a top 5 pound for pound guy, coming off, you know, a knockout of one of the best fighters in the sport. So, you know, the fact that if that rematch was made, you know, if that was made, most people would probably favor Pacquiao just based on the first fight, based on Pacquiao still looking like he has his speed intact and looking close to his old self. And like you said, you know, even though I think Bradley's stock has risen, he's also been in two really rough fights, and there was nothing really stylistically that makes you think he could adapt. You know, I mean, Pacquiao and Marquez are different fights. and I think the Marquez style was really good for Tim Bradley. You know, we could say that now after we saw what happened. I mean, I picked Marquez to win it, but looking back, I think the style was an issue for him. Pacquiao's completely different than that, and we saw what happened the first time they fought. You know, I thought it was competitive. I don't think Bradley got, like, just, it wasn't Mayweather-Canelo, it wasn't Pacquiao-Rios, but I did think Manny clearly won. And I just think the fact that, again, he'd be a favorite over a guy like Bradley now, even in this condition, it makes him, you know, still kind of on top of the sport, one of the best guys in the division, and right behind Mayweather in terms of a pound-for-pound talent.
Well, it, of course, you know, being a favorite is also about notoriety and all that type of stuff, too, and, you know, where they would fight and blah, blah, blah. But regardless, your point is still there. The fact that Tim Bradley has obviously gone on to do well, you know, after what many of us felt were clearly was clearly losing to Manny Pacquiao. And regardless, he's gone on to beat, well, it's kind of tough to say about Provodnikov right at this moment because I don't get me wrong, I love the guy, but I'm not thoroughly convinced that he's 1,000% world class given his opponents. Either way, he's probably going to give just about any fighter a whole lot of shit, you know, if he can get his hands on him. Regardless, you know, Tim Bradley's gone on to do very well. And so, yeah, I think that it's clear that no matter – see, now you're talking me into a fucking Manny Pacquiao-Floyd Mayweather fight. God damn it, Foley.
Well, I just think, you know, short of, if we're playing fantasy world and we're going any fight for Floyd Mayweather, I mean, that's still kind of at the top of my list. I mean, yeah, okay, I'd love seeing Mayweather fight like Golovkin or something if that would happen, but – even on, you know, on paper, I mean, does anyone else deserve the fight as much as Pacquiao? I mean, they're the two icons of the last generation. It's still a huge fight. And I think competitively, I think that the pendulum has swung that Mayweather is so, you know, the perception is so much on Mayweather's side now that I almost like making a play on Pacquiao if that comes out to be like a 3-1, you know. I mean, if the odds are similar to what Mayweather is getting against Canelo, and the way people talk, I mean, it seems like Mayweather's an overwhelming favorite. I just, you know, you look at the hand speed of that guy, and still, it's like no one else in the sport can show that to Floyd. And we talk about Amir Khan has fast hands. They're not as fast as Pacquiao's, and Amir Khan is, you know, as fragile as a boxing writer's ego.
Boom. That's where it is. I mean, oh, man, just the whole Floyd-Manny thing is, it's almost like tripping me out that I'm able to talk
about
this seriously with somebody.
Well, they'll always be intertwined, so, I mean, we just had to talk about it for a minute, because I think that rant was that's what the casual fan thinks about. Oh, sorry, Patrick.
No,
I'm just going to the casual fans, you know. The casual fan, I mean, that's still the response to this day. They don't know any of the other guys.
No, of course, and something really, really drastic would have to happen for Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao to not be the biggest fight in the world. Something really, really drastic would have to happen for that to be the case. And I don't want to jump too far off subject here, but there was breaking news that I just read. Shane Mosley just made weight for his bout with Anthony Mundine, as did Mundine. And so, yeah, speaking of things that not a whole lot of people give a shit about, Miley Cyrus is a hooker. Let's move on with Floyd Mayweather Pacquiao.
Wait, is Mosley Mundine is tomorrow?
I guess, because I just read that they made weight for it.
I just remember that whole fiasco where it got canceled, and I thought he left Australia, and I didn't know that. I heard that it was back on. I didn't know it was this week.
I knew that they had rescheduled it, but, I mean, I didn't even know until right now when I read that I guess it's going to be tomorrow. I mean, kind of an odd day of the week to have it. I don't know.
Sweet. Well, I'll probably watch the Tarver fight tonight and then stay up all night and watch the Mosley fight and then kill myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop the fucking presses because we're all going to do it. Well, as to Manny Pacquiao versus Rios, like the fight itself, is there anything that Brandon Rios could have done differently or should have done differently that would have put him in that fight? I mean, for instance, not coming into the ring as a middleweight, things like that. Would any of these things have given him a better shot at actually winning that fight, or would it not have really mattered?
Yeah, I didn't think that he gave himself the best chance to win, you know, kind of like what I thought about Canelo against Floyd. I mean, I think a great example is like Guerrero against Floyd. I don't think Guerrero, there's anything Guerrero could do. You know, I mean, I think Guerrero really did fight his best fight. I think that Rios, I would like to see him kind of apply more pressure, throw more punches. I mean, that's the big thing. And maybe the weight did have something to do with it. You know, I mean, like sometimes a guy moves up and it seems like, okay, well now he'll be comfortable, but you're not, you know, you're not on the same regimen you were before and you're coming in heavier. And the other thing about, I mean, ultimately, I think based on what we saw, you know, Pacquiao is just better. And as long as he wasn't damaged and he still had his hand speed and everything, he's always going to beat Brandon, a guy like Brandon Rios. You know, but I do think Rios could have done more to potentially trouble him and you know, test him a little bit. He tried, but he came up short. I mean, there's nothing to hang his head about. But I did want to talk about a little bit about Rios, and I'm always like uncomfortable even mentioning this kind of stuff. But I think the guy's got a really noticeable slur at this point. I mean, am I imagining that?
I don't know that he totally does, but it's kind of tough when a fighter like seems to have a kind of a lazy way of speaking in general. I mean, Brandon Rios just isn't the most eloquent guy in the first place. Even a handful of years ago, he wasn't, you know, before he had been in a number of wars. Wouldn't that be the ultimate irony though? Or I guess irony, because I suck at knowing what irony actually is, but if Brandon Rios wound up, you know, badly injured as a result of the sport after having, you know, taken the piss to Freddie Roach in that video a handful of years ago, I'm not saying it would be funny, but it would almost be some type of poetic justice if that were the case. But to answer your question,
man,
I haven't really noticed him slurring a lot, but I do kind of see what you're saying.
Well, I just, like, I've watched Rios for a few years ever since he came on, and I really liked the guy. I thought just, I know at times he's acted really immature and done some things that weren't sensitive, but I also think, and I think 24/7 showed this too, I mean, I think at his heart he's a good guy. I really do. And, but the writing was on that wall, like you said. I mean, the mocking of Roach's Parkinson's, but you look at the way that Rios fights and the wars that he's been in. I mean, it's like, it's inevitable. You're not going to walk out of that the same person you were coming into it. And as far as his speech, I mean, because I've seen interviews of the guy for years because I've liked his personality, and I think he's, you know, can be funny because he's so profane and he just kind of says whatever's on his mind. And anybody who just can be themselves, you know, when a lot of these guys put on these personas in front of the microphone, you know, with Rios, it's totally genuine. I do think that you can tell in his voice that he sounds different than he did before, that it's thicker. I hate to even bring it up because, you know, how you're a guy on a couch watching on TV and you're trying to make like a medical diagnosis, you know, it's kind of ridiculous, but I mean, other people at my house who were watching the pre-fight interviews never had even seen this guy, had commented on his speech. And I know that he's not the most eloquent like orator, but it's not like what he's saying. It's like the way that the words are coming out. It just doesn't sound like it. And you know, we know what it sounds like. It sounds like an old boxer who's taken a lot of punches to the head. And so I am concerned about Rios's health going forward. He's an exciting fighter and he gave us some great fights, but I'd wondered a couple years ago, how long can this guy go on like this? I mean, after the first Alvarado fight. And I think the answer to that question is probably not very long.
Well, I mean, I don't want to kick a guy while he's down, but I'm going to go forward with the sentence and kick a guy while he's down. But during the entire fight, and maybe I just have a misconception of what Brandon Rios is or who he is as a fighter, I don't know. I'm willing to accept that could be the case, though. But I expected more relentless, just absolutely, you know, teeth-gnashing pressure from Brandon Rios. And like I said, maybe I'm just mistaken about what he was capable of bringing to the ring. I just expected a little bit more, and especially after post-fight interviews that he's given, and he said, oh, no, he never hurt me, I was totally fine, you know, his power isn't really shit. And I'm kind of thinking, well, then why didn't you really go after him? And perhaps it's because he couldn't. But I look at Manny Pacquiao's footwork, and while I don't think that – I don't agree with the notion that he looks totally changed or he's been, you know, ruined as a fighter and all that type of stuff. That's a lot of hyperbole that's not deserved. But even now, the fighter that he is, he's never had superb footwork. He's never had super fast feet. You know, it's not like Brandon Rios was in there with Richard Avril, who was turning him around all the time and, you know, being a fucking Rubik's Cube in front of him. You know, it's not like Manny Pacquiao wasn't, for the most part, there to be hit. If a guy's attacking that much, there are going to be chances to hit him. But
well,
Brandon Rios just seemed like he either was unwilling or unable to grit down and, you know, just kind of take some shots and move in on him. Am I wrong there?
I mean, I slightly disagree with you because I do think Pacquiao has always had really quick feet. I don't think he's had the best footwork in terms of his balance and that kind of thing, because I think he has in the past, the way he kind of bounces around, he does get hit, you know, when he's not ready and he gets kind of staggered back a couple times. I mean, it's happened against Marquez. It happens against a lot of the good boxers that he's fought. But I did think in this fight he was spinning Rios around, exactly like what you were saying. I mean, I think Rios's best chance was like come forward and catch him early. I mean, start throwing punches before he could get into his rhythm, and he kind of came out like the same way I thought Canelo did against Floyd, where he came out in the first round and was trying to box. And you know, Canelo's more of a boxer. I mean, you can understand that, I guess. But Rios, it was like, he was kind of moving forward, but I just thought he was way too tentative early. And once Pacquiao got into his rhythm and kind of got the confidence back of like, okay, I can hang in there, been, you know, touched a couple times, I thought that was exactly what he was doing, throwing combinations, darting out of the way. And there was a couple times where Rios basically, like, you know, did have to turn around, you know, 180 degrees to see Pacquiao and almost like shrugged his shoulders, like, come on, you know, like stand in front of me for a second. So,
Don't get me wrong, because he definitely moved on him, and it wasn't like he stood right there, but basically kind of like you said in like that second part of that first sentence that you said, that he's never had particularly good footwork. I mean, I don't mean to say that he's a plodding guy with, you know, 20-pound weights on his legs at all time or anything, but he's never really been the type of guy that can really bounce around the ring. When he does that type of stuff, those were the times when, especially in the first three fights, where Marquez was catching him really bad, when he was kind of trying to get up onto his feet and move back, because his defense isn't that great when he does that type of stuff. Well, in any event.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, yeah.
It just seems like, I just felt like there was more that he could have done, like, in round two and three, for example, it looked to me like Rios was thinking, okay, I need to go to the body and slow this guy down, because he's just kind of getting off first and getting off second and third and fourth, and I can't really do anything about it. And he hit him with a couple of body shots that I was thinking, oh, well, if he can keep that up, then this could get kind of interesting, because Manny looks like he doesn't really like those body shots very much, because he was moving away as soon as he landed them. But maybe there was just a larger strategy at play where Manny was thinking, let's not go too crazy here. Let's just score points and basically kick this guy's ass from the outside, which is essentially what he did.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there were a few times in the fight where I thought he had genuinely, like, staggered Rios, caught him with some, you know, huge punches. And he followed up a little bit. And, you know, there were a couple times where I was like, oh, man, he might get him here. I think late in the fight, it was smart what Pacquiao did in the last few rounds. You know, and there's just such a huge gap in speed. I mean, that was, you know, 100%, I mean, the story. Just Rios had no answer for it.
Yeah. No matter how scientific you want to get in breaking down the fight and what little tiny muscle movement did this or that, the point is this: Manny Pacquiao was clearly too much for Brandon Rios in just about every way. So, you know, where do we go forward from here? I mean, it seems that we were already talking about the Floyd Mayweather, or a potential Floyd Mayweather fight for Manny again, and a couple other fights for him. But where does Brandon Rios go now? I mean, it does not bode well for me that he weighed in as a welterweight, but then comes in at almost 160 pounds when this is a guy who was not that long ago at lightweight. And I understand the whole day before weigh-in thing and guys gaining weight, so I know that maybe sounds a little bit more shocking than it really is, since every fighter does it. But at the same time, he just, as a welterweight, he didn't really look that good to me. He didn't look all that cut up. He looked slow. So
I agree. I think 40 would be a better division for him, but I'm not sure if it even matters anymore at this point. The guys that Rios is going to be mixed up with, it's either going to be an Alvarado rematch or maybe they do a Rios-Provodnikov. Like I said, I'm a little bit leery about Rios going forward just because I feel like guys who are constantly in wars like that, and I don't know. Personally, I would be fine if Rios just took all the money they made from Pacquiao and left the sport. But I know that's not going to happen. We'll probably get a third fight with Alvarado, and that could definitely be exciting. I'd like to see Rios take some time off, a year off or something like that. He just made a lot of money. I think eventually, that's gonna happen for sure. The series is 1-1. They're both coming off losses. It's just a no-brainer that you would make that fight. The way I would want to see things go is that happen, Provodnikov get Marquez, and then you do – well, actually, to be honest with you, man, the way I want to see – the fight I want to see most of any of that entire group is Pacquiao-Marquez 5. I think that's the one that I would – that's the one that I really want to see. What I think is more likely is that you're going to get Pacquiao-Bradley rematch, and maybe they can work something out with Marquez and Provodnikov, and, hey, that sounds pretty awesome.
They can match Juan Manuel Marquez and Manny Pacquiao 18 times, like Sam Langford and Harry Wills, and I would bet that every single one of those fights would at the very least be interesting. They offer me Juan Manuel Marquez versus Manny Pacquiao again and again and again. Unless one of these guys is missing a leg, doesn't have an eye, comes into the fucking ring on a walker or some shit, even enters the ring in a fucking Tom Cruise Rascal motorized cart, I'm still going to watch that shit. It's going to be good. So if they offer that up, yeah, I'll do that again.
Yeah, I'll keep gobbling it up. After the third fight, I can understand some fatigue of the for the matchup. I personally wasn't like that looking forward to the fourth fight because I thought the third was probably the weakest of the three, and I just thought, okay, we're never going to get a definitive answer. These guys are always going to be in a close fight, but the first two had a lot more excitement and drama, and this one was more tactical. And I just thought, okay, let it go. I didn't have really high expectations for the fourth one, but of course the story changed. Marquez got the upper hand, and I just think Pacquiao deserves a chance to, avenge that or sit kind of, put his own stamp on it because, I just think that they're both great fighters and I think the fourth fight kind of changed everything and made a fifth fight really, really compelling.
Well, not to, keep beating this dead horse about the fight itself, but a young lady named Olga Woods had tweeted that she thought that it was Brandon Rios' corner or lack thereof that was a problem and that she felt his corner didn't offer much sound advice during the fight. Do you think that was the case? We kind of answered this already as far as whether or not Brandon Rios would have been able to beat him under any circumstances, but do you think that there was an issue with the corner?
I've never really... I don't know. I haven't been like a huge Robert Garcia fan because I've thought there were a couple times, not so much as far as the tactical stuff, but for one, I think a lot of his fighters are just really great talents that have like Nonito Donaire and his brother Mikey Garcia. But I really didn't like, didn't even consider stopping the fight with Margarito and Pacquiao. Okay, I didn't like when Brandon Rios showed up to the weigh-in against John Murray and looked like he was on the verge of death. So I kind of like had questions from a compassion standpoint of is this guy really looking out for his fighters in the best way possible without any of the tactical bullshit aside. But look, here against Rios against Pacquiao, what kind of game plan could they have? We know that Rios is. His best chance was to go in there and just start, try to turn it into a brawl and throw as many punches as he could and hope that he, catches the guy. Once it got into the first few rounds, once Pacquiao kind of got his confidence and got into rhythm. I mean, there was nothing they could say to Rios. I mean, they could have instilled more urgency to go for it, but you're also putting him at more risk by doing that. So I don't know. I mean, and honestly, the way Pacquiao was fighting, even if Rios had tried to kind of charge at him and maybe, you know, put himself in harm's way more to try to get off his own punches, I don't even think Pacquiao takes that bait.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there was a lot they could say.
Yeah, I'm skeptical that there was really anything they could say that would have gotten him through that fight with a win. Last question before we move on to the undercard. Would you rather take an Alex Ariza kick to the chest, or would you rather be filmed shouting racial epithets by Ilie Sekpak? Go ahead.
Oh, man. I'd probably rather drink Juan Manuel Marquez's urine.
Good answer. That's always the correct answer, no matter what the question is.
Yeah, it was too bad that we wrapped up last week, and then that happened.
Yeah, it happened like 15 minutes later, and I was thinking, fuck, we missed it. We missed that window just by a little bit.
Emergency TQBR radio session. We got to talk about this.
I'm not going to lie. I did think about that, but I was like, nah, we'll leave it. We'll let Twitter take care of it, and boy, did they.
I mean, I think Alex Ariza came off like just horribly in that video. I mean, it just like he's
nobody came off good.
Nobody came off well. I guess you got to give Robert Garcia some credit there. He did keep his composure better than the other people. You know what Roach did? If you want to be all politically correct about it, it's not really like acceptable language. But you also have to understand that this is an old white guy who's basically spent his life in boxing gyms and. That's kind of the go-to. I mean, I thought it was kind of like in Do the Right Thing, Sal's Pizzeria, you know, when Sal drops the N-bomb on Radio Raheem. I mean, yeah, it was definitely out of line, but and maybe like in some way showed this kind of like latent racism inside of the person, even though they're probably in some, you know, it's more complex than just kind of like he's a racist, he's not a racist. I mean, it was kind of like shades of gray there. I thought it was relatively innocuous, you know, when people made such a huge deal about that, like when you saw some of the behavior that was coming from Ariza in terms of just, and it just shows culture too. I mean, Ariza is like, you know, dropping gay epithets at one of those guys, like
who the fuck throws the first punch and it's a kick to the chest?
Everything he did, like him kicking him in the chest and then calling the guy a faggot, using that word multiple times for no reason, and then mocking Roach's Parkinson's. I mean, all three of those were worse than what Roach did. But you're right; nobody came out looking good. It sucks. Because, you know, it basically made everyone look bad except for Robert Garcia and Brandon Rios, who kind of weren't really involved in it. But, you know, to me, the biggest crimes were committed by Ariza. And I think mocking the Parkinson's was just sickening to me. I mean, I just really wanted somebody to just come in and just beat the shit out of him.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to downplay anything that anybody did. I mean, I'm sure that if I were there and I were caught in the middle of it, I probably would have been just as upset no matter which side I was on. I'd be mad at the other side or whatever. But, you know, the first thing that I saw about this was that I went on to Facebook, I think, to go, like, you know, drop a link to the show or something like that. And I saw that somebody had posted a video, and they had posted, you know, like, shaking my head or something like that. And so I watched it because they didn't say anything about it, and I didn't know what it was. So I watched it real quick. And it was Ilie Sekpak going on and on and on about how Freddie Roach is an anti-Semitic and all this stuff like that. And I was like, all right. So I watched the video, and it just, the whole thing comes off bad. Ilie Sekpak comes off as an instigator the entire time. He's sitting there, you know, like, I can't really look at somebody who's holding a video camera up into someone's face while they're all pissed off as anything other than an instigator. What do you think that person is going to do? Or, I mean, you're obviously looking for something to happen if you're all, like, eagerly videotaping this situation. And then Alex Ariza is shouting shit. Freddie Roach is shouting shit. Robert Garcia was just kind of sitting there. So, yeah, you're right. He didn't really look that bad. And even so, he came out – he later on wound up apologizing and saying, you know, this was all stupid. What the hell? So, at the very least, he didn't look so bad. But the whole thing was just, it was just dirty, you know, and it reeked of that kind of sensationalist, like,
yeah,
quote-unquote,
well,
journalism.
And this is the whole thing. Like, you know, we all saw what Roach did. Yeah, it wasn't cool, okay? It was bogus. But for Elie Sekbak to go and take that and, you know, my grandfather died in a concentration camp and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know, Roach should be part of the KKK and he's making, you know, the Nazis,
yeah,
invoking the Holocaust. I mean, that
to
me
is
just
appeal to
more
emotion,
disgusting,
yeah,
than what Roach's, you know, tick of, like, invoking their race when he's, like, you know, in a shit-talking contest. I mean, like, because he's just, Sekbak's just trying to exploit, you know, something, and then invoking these great tragedies from history. It was just like opportunism to try to, like, further his own cause, and you know, I mean,
exactly.
And the guy's so biased, it's ridiculous. It's obvious,
yeah,
what he's trying to do, and it's just, you know, I mean, it's just funny that a guy's, like, trying to play this whole, like, you know, like, he's in, you know, good taste, and he's so offended by these comments, but what he's doing is just as bad.
Exactly. Yeah, it was just it was a CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. You know, they put on the huge red
yellow journalist,
and the yeah, it was just Freddie Roach a racist. You know, Freddie Roach hates Jews. You know, it was bad. But speaking of racial epithets, the Mexican Russian Mexican, however that goes, he wound up prevailing over Billy Bibb a second time on the undercard, and I guess that was, you know, probably the best fight, I guess, unless
yeah,
you're counting the Andy Ruiz Torhammer, whatever fight. But regardless, Gradovich versus Dib 2. I was watching that fight live, and I saw that it seemed as though scores were kind of all over the place on my timeline anyway, and take that for what it is, but it seemed like there were a whole lot of people that were giving Billy Dib rounds, and I just kind of couldn't. I mean, if you wanted to give him a round or two, sure, but he looked like shit to me. What did he do that fight?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think too much about it. You know, I was kind of, to be honest with you, I was kind of like half watching early and then kind of caught the last couple rounds when Gradovich came on and then stopped him. And you know, Dib, for all the criticism he takes, I mean, he really, you know, he went out on his shield. I mean, he took a lot of, you know, you gotta respect that he showed heart. He was just obviously physically not capable of defending himself at the end there, and he was still trying, you know, just taking huge flush shots to the head. So, Gradovich is, you know, a fun guy to watch going forward, but it really wasn't, well, you know, it wasn't anything world class like you said. And you just think back on,
no,
the,
I...
on the Matisse Garcia under, you know, second slot on that Canelo Floyd pay per view.
Well, one thing is clear. Billy Dib is no Tor Hamer, that's for sure, and he's not going to be getting dropped by Lou DeBell anytime soon. So I'll give him that much for sure. He didn't go out like a punk, as they say. But, you know,
that's just what you get for putting Tor Hamer on the fucking undercard in the first place. I mean, did anyone not see his last fight? It was exactly the same thing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying, though? I mean, it's like, this isn't like,
yes,
it's not,
no,
it's like, oh, he quit, I'm shocked. It was the exact same thing that happened. You knew as soon as Ruiz started coming on, you knew that Hamer wasn't going to let him knock him out.
Well, yeah, we even talked about that, you know, last week when we were previewing the fight, just about how if the going got tough, that's exactly what was going to happen, basically. So to act like it was some big revelation when it happened was, you know, a little bit of a red herring there.
Yeah, I would say.
Well, I mean, as far as Gradovich goes, I'm not really seeing a whole lot of options for him at featherweight. It's not that he's totally devoid of options, but it seems like there, you know, maybe a unification with Salido, who I think holds the WBO belt now.
Oh yeah,
because he won it against Cruz. But
well, they got some stuff. Top Rank's got some stuff over there. I mean, they got Donaire.
Yeah, I'm not really sure that that's the direction they'd want to go with Gradovich, but I guess maybe. I mean, and also on top of that, there's the issue of that they're both with Garcia.
Okay, there's that. Yeah, that's right. But they also got – but that also – I think I've read, though, that they would kind of encourage that just because it would be a big money opportunity for Gradovich. So they might – they could work something out where he doesn't – you know, I'm not sure whose corner he would be in, but that's a good point. But, yeah, they have Lomachenko they're bringing up, and they got and then Rigondeaux's right in the division below. And, you know, a guy like Gradovich, I mean, that's a good style to make Rigondeaux look good. So
yeah,
I can
agree on that one.
I'm sure he'll be on HBO against one of those guys next year.
Well, do you think that as far as his actual quality, Gradovich's quality, do you think that it's more that he's just kind of a fun fighter who can beat a Billy Dib type and that he's going to get, I don't know, maybe outclassed or so by guys like Donaida or Rigondeaux or whatever? Or do you think that he has a legitimate shot at featherweight?
Well, I think he's in a tough weight area as far as that, you know, as far as the top guys in that division, because they both have a lot of class. You know, they're both two excellent boxers, Rigondeaux and Donaire. I do think he'd be a pretty significant underdog against those guys. He's a fun fighter. The problem is I don't think he's got a lot of power, even though he did get the stoppage on Dib. When you fight in that brawling, relentless style, it's kind of like Pravodnikov in a way. You know, Pravodnikov's got power. So his style, I mean, he can fight boxers because he can hurt them. I'm not sure if Gradovich can do that, even though he throws a lot of volume. I don't know if he's got that kind of power to really be able to change a fight against guys like that who can you know, we think, probably outbox him pretty easily. But it's a style
that... He seems a little more like a grinder, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a fun style. I mean, it's a great style against a boxer as far as aesthetically, because generally the boxer will have to throw more punches than they usually do. And you know, I could see a guy like Rigondeaux with his accuracy against somebody like Gradovich, you know, maybe scoring a spectacular knockout, doing something that really can boost his stock. So he's going to have a purpose, I think, for those guys. And, hey, you know, when they get in the ring, anything can happen. And if he pulls off an upset, then he's huge, and he's the featherweight Pravodnikov. But I don't think he's going that way, that high.
Since we're on the subject of Nonito Donaire, and it sounded to me like earlier this week I had read a report that I think that it had said that Nonito thought that his eye socket was busted as a result of the Darchinian fight. And, I mean, it's kind of tough to really go into where Darchinian goes from here, because I think it's fairly clear that he's at the end of his career, and if he's not, then he probably should be, just on age alone. You know, he gave an absolutely terrific effort against Nonito in the second fight there, but I didn't even think about this till right now. What if they matched Gradovich with Darchinian?
Yeah, that's not bad. That sounds like a pretty good fight.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't think about that earlier, but... That's a fight I wouldn't buy it, but I certainly wouldn't mind it being on
HBO. I would
pay
$75
like
HD for that.
Yeah. Put Andy Ruiz and Tor Hamer rematch on the undercard.
Got to do it.
Yep. I think that could be a pretty interesting fight, though.
Hamer fought Seth Mitchell, he might be able to knock him out before he quit.
Yeah, that's true. There is that little small opening there.
There's a small window.
He's got about 2-3 rounds tops.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting fight part, I was talking about Gradovich Darchinian, though, not the
imaginary match.
Just to make that clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to make that clear. But, well, all right, Andy Ruiz, then, should we really be taking him seriously? I mean, I can't really. I mean, he got the win, yes, but I don't know. The physique, and I know that it's kind of a memorable thing, and it's kind of, you know, makes him stand out and all that type of stuff, but he seems like a nice guy and everything, but I just can't really take it that seriously, especially in a division where you're not having to make a weight. So it's not like you're having to really hurt your body in order to be a heavyweight. Like, for example, if Brandon Rios was still trying to make 135 pounds, he's hurting his body to do that. You're not doing that at heavyweight. And I understand that it's easier to kind of just slip or slide, let your weight go, but it's tough for me to really even think about taking him seriously as a world-class heavyweight, if that even exists anymore, with his physique looking like that.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same, you know, I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, the division's so bad now that he probably is one of the best younger guys coming up, at least, you know, this, on, you know, the Western Hemisphere. But, yeah, I mean, you see him, and again, I'm kind of like thinking in the mindset of the casual fan. You know, you're watching, the casual fan watching that pay-per-view is, oh, what, is Butterbean back? And they don't look at him as a credible contender because look the way that he looks. He doesn't look like a contender. But he is a good, he is obviously a good fighter. I think it's a little bit disconcerting that Hamer was able to hit him early with some pretty good shots. So that maybe speaks to some kind of deficiency as far as his boxing and his defense and that kind of thing. But he stood up to him well. And obviously he eventually came over and took over the fight and probably was going to knock Hamer out in a few rounds if it continued. He's a good fighter. I mean, I'm kind of with you on that. But, you know, it's like how seriously do you take any heavyweight contender? You know, I mean, nowadays it's like none of them are that good. Do you take Deontay Wilder seriously with 30 knockouts over guys that no one's ever heard of? I mean,
that's fair.
You know, so he's in the mix. I mean, I like heavyweight fights just because they're such big guys and one punch. You see a lot more knockouts usually up there, but so I'm down to see him fight some other guys and some you know, keep working his way up. I mean, I'm not calling him the next great heavyweight champion, but you know, as far as like Ruiz or a Wilder or Bryant Jennings or, you know, in that class of like younger guys coming up trying to kind of prove themselves, I'll continue to watch Ruiz.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm not going to watch him on principle because he's fat. I mean, that's probably on principle why people don't listen to this show, because I'm fat. But in terms of, you know, actually competing, it's just, I don't know, I just feel like he needs to make a little bit more of an effort. But as far as whether or not he's a real fighter, I think it's pretty clear he is. Even though he comes in fat, he's got fairly quick hands for a big guy. You know,
yeah, he does.
His footwork, it's not great, but it's good enough for what he wants to do, which is basically move forward on a guy. And when a guy has a style like that he kind of just wants to crowd an opponent, throw a lot of punches, you know, hope to get him with a bigger shot, they're going to get hit. But yes, I do kind of agree with you that early on it was a little bit worrisome that it seemed like Tor Hamer, I think they said that he landed about 50% of his shots, and especially for a guy who's not exactly a pinpoint accurate type of puncher, that's fairly high. So
yeah.
It does make me wonder what would happen against another better heavyweight.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, it's like kind of like heavyweights kind of have this mystique and you're always looking for the next guy, especially with the Klitschko's dominating and not having the most exciting style. You know, we want to have somebody we can kind of believe in that will be that guy, because, you know, I do think when the heavyweight division is great, boxing as a whole is better. But, you know, maybe it never is again, just because you won't have those type of athletes. I mean, Andy Ruiz doesn't look like that. You know, he doesn't look like Mike Tyson. But, you know, anytime a guy's, like, on his way up, you want to, you know, he's done enough to keep us interested. And, yeah, the one thing that I loved that he did was when Hamer quit, Ruiz was, you could see, was incredibly disappointed. He wasn't like, yeah, I won, you know, raising his hands up. I mean, he was pissed. Like, he's like, this guy robbed me of the shot to beat him clean. He wanted to go out there and kick his ass in the next round.
It kind of reminds me of that scene in that movie Kingpin where they walk into the bowling alley and Randy Quaid goes, oh, it's such an honor to be in the presence of all these great athletes. And it pans over to, like, the bench of the bowlers and, like, there's dudes, like, wolfing down hot dogs. You know, there's another dude polishing his bowling ball that looks about 413 pounds.
Yeah.
But then it is one of the few sports, boxing that is, where, you know, a heavyweight could come in grotesquely overweight and still get a knockout, win a big fight. So
yeah,
you do have to take them seriously. So what's next? What's a realistic next step for Andy Ruiz then, in terms of quality and in terms of getting himself ahead in the division?
Yeah, you know, that I'm not really sure, because I'm not that familiar with, you know, outside of the guys that we see, like, who's out there? Are there other young heavyweights that you could match him with? I mean, he's not going to get matched with any, he's not going to get matched with like Jennings or Wilder or any of that, because they're kind of all on their own trajectories. And I'm not sure like who Top Rank has, but how about, look at Mike Perez, who just fought Abdus Salamov. That's a guy that, you think would probably be a lot of trouble for Ruiz right now. So he's still on a way, he still has a couple levels to go before he gets up there to where he's like fighting a top 10 guy. But I'm really not sure. I can't think of any names. Like, it's easier with somebody like Deontay Wilder because he's a little bit further along. And, in my mind, he's ready to go in there and test himself against somebody like Chris Areola or Tony Thompson or one of those guys. It's been long enough. Ruiz is still, a couple levels behind that on his way up. And I just don't know who's out there. I mean, I think one thing with his physique that's potentially worrisome, and it would be a good idea, is put him in with somebody who's durable, because I think the guy needs to go some rounds. Because you look at him, and that's kind of a concern, is, okay, well, he just looks like he's going to gas late, if this thing goes, if he gets pushed and goes far, how much is he going to have in the tank? Because he doesn't look like he's 100% in shape.
Well, I'm not 100% convinced that the whole Top Rank versus Golden Boy thing is quite as relevant in a division like heavyweight as it is in a division like, say, welterweight. Just because neither promotional company seems really all that invested at heavyweight, and rightfully so. And that doesn't mean that, they can just make whatever fight they want at any time and there's never going to be an issue like that. But until Andy Ruiz proves himself to be a serious commodity or something like that, I don't know what would necessarily be stopping Top Rank from, maybe they really did want to make a Seth Mitchell fight or something like that.
Ruiz against Seth Mitchell?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know that I could see them really digging their heels in that much. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well. Anyway, as far as the undercard goes, I guess probably the next biggest fighter, perhaps the biggest fight on the undercard, as far as name value or drawing power, was probably Zhou Shuming's third professional fight. Now, I've been pretty hard on the guy, and I'm not going to suggest like he was in with anybody who, was going to be somebody that would make his career go forward leaps and bounds or anything like that. His opponent was not that good. Although, I will say that I was a little bit surprised, because I thought that Shuming looked a little bit better than he had previously. Now, again, the quality of the opponent has to be taken into account. But he seems to be at that point in his career where maybe they do see the writing on the wall, and Top Rank doesn't really think that he's going to go that far, although I kind of doubt they're going to settle on that. They're probably going to push him forward and try to get him a belt at some point. Mm-hmm. That said, he looks like he's improving to me, surprisingly. What do you think?
He looked decent, but it's just hard not to be skeptical and kind of imagine how this is going to play out. They're going to keep getting him wins and kind of build up his record a little bit. And like you said, I mean, if maybe there's like an easy opportunity that opens up for a belt, especially if somebody moved up or something like that, and they could create like a, Shuming and somebody to fill the vacancy where he wouldn't have to fight like a top opponent. That's probably what they'll try to engineer, but I don't know how it plays out, because right now, I mean, we all think that basically if, Shuming were to fight any of the top guys there at 112 or any of those best little small fighters like Roman Gonzalez or the Estrada, he would get destroyed, because those guys just appear to be much better professional fighters than he is, And so is that where this leads eventually, that eventually Shuming, builds his record, they make some money, they keep putting him on these shows in China, and then eventually, kind of cash him out in a fight where he's going to be a pretty big underdog, because that's what's going to happen if he keeps moving up. I don't know. He looked better, and it was okay, but he doesn't seem like he has real top world-class pro potential, and he's pretty old for a flyweight and a guy who's kind of just starting his pro career. But eventually, I mean, maybe Top Rank uses him as like a launching point for somebody like Estrada, who's 23, or you know, Gonzalez, who I think is also like 25 or 26, because those are really exciting young fighters who can't get on HBO. Shaming is there because he's like a Chinese, you know, hero, and he's incredibly popular there, and Top Rank's, you know, arranged to do these cards that were on HBO too. So maybe someday Shaming's kind of the guy who, you know, we get introduced to one of those great, you know, really exciting, good young fighters in the division. But I don't think Shaming's ever going to be the guy as pro.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. He's not going to be going into the International Boxing Hall of Fame or anything like that, or at least from what I can see. But at least as far as being a real fighter and not just some, you know, circus act, because I really was pretty convinced that's what he was going to be, and that's what he looked like in his first two fights to me. He was winging wide punches, you know, leading with uppercuts from like 14 feet away and, you know, missing wildly and falling all over the place. And he just looked sharper to me. He looked more like a real fighter and somebody who's taking it, you know, really seriously. How far he goes, I don't know. Could he win a belt? Most likely, because that's just the way that the sport is structured now, that belts are just easier to win. But, you know, in any event, I did want to give him at least a little smattering of credit because I thought he looked better.
Yeah, and Shaming won 2 gold medals, right? I mean, so the guy's not a complete scrub or anything like that. I think a big part of it is that he's old.
Yeah, he is not young. I think he's 31 or 32 or something like that, and especially for a little guy. Well, for any fighter just starting out, that's not young. But especially for a little guy, that's, you know, that's like at the tail end of a career type of thing. You know, and he actually, I think he won 3 gold medals, but regardless, he won multiple gold medals. And so the point is that he's not any stranger to the game, but where he goes, that's the question. Although I could easily see a guy like Juan Estrada or, you know, Roman Gonzalez kicking the crap out of him right now, needless to say.
Yeah, Roman Gonzalez, unfortunately, would probably knock his head into Roy Jones's lap.
That totally set me up for a joke that I'm not going to bite on. Not going to do it. Well,
all right.
As far as like which fighter looked best aside from Pacquiao on the undercard, I would have to say it was probably Felix Verdejo. And that fight maybe was the most entertaining fight on the card, not so much from like a competition standpoint, but just from it being fun to watch, because his opponent, I'm going to take a stab at this, because they were able to do it multiple times on the HBO broadcast. So much, in fact, that it had to have been intentional. Petsamuth Bonamukdahan. I think I got it. His opponent, he was getting banged around the entire fight. And, I mean, he didn't win a round, but he was still doing the, like, little hip gyrations and, like, sticking out his tongue, banging his chest, stuff like that. That made it kind of funny to watch. And he's, at least because of that, I almost feel like he's earned himself another spot on TV. You know, get this dude on here somewhere and have him do that against somebody else. I don't know. It wasn't a competitive fight, but it was kind of fun to watch because of that crazy shit.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty awesome. And Verdejo looked good, and the opponent was fun and you know, game. Although it did kind of have the feel in the last couple rounds, like, oh, okay, stop at any time, Frank. You know, I mean, it's just eventually it got a little bit of a one-sided beatdown.
Yeah, there's no question. It got slightly ugly towards the end there, but at least Bonamukdahan kept it, you know, kind of fun just by messing around. But, you know, it was a mismatch from the outset. That was pretty clear.
Well, there was another amazing moment early in the commentary where they were talking about, God, I can't even remember who it is. Maybe it was Rocky Martinez, but Max was saying how somebody was the only current, well, Martinez just lost, but or was the only current Puerto Rican belt holder. And Roy goes, like, what about that junior welterweight, Garcia? And did you catch that part?
Yeah, and then he was saying, well, he's not Puerto Rican. He's Puerto Rican-American.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome. Yeah, so Max was like, well, he's not, you know, he's Puerto, or he goes, what nationality is he? And Max was like, Puerto Rican, but he's American, Puerto Rican. And Roy was like, well, but I think his father is somewhat Puerto Rican.
Well, I just liked the little blurb in there that Max had to slip in, like, oh, yeah, Puerto Rico is America. But anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that also, and first of all, I think Angel is also born in America.
Yeah, you know, I do understand it. Maybe if I were Puerto Rican, I would probably be a little bit more or less enthusiastic or, you know, maybe a bit more bummed about not having a world champion or something like that. You know, it just seemed like kind of it was more like comedy than anything else. But in terms of what they were talking about, Felix Verdejo, I would have to say, has a pretty damn good chance of moving forward. He looked very sharp to me. And he also wasn't really fazed by all the shit that Duane Mukdahan was doing. And I liked that. You know, he kind of just stuck to business, and the business was kicking the shit out of his opponent.
Yeah, he's a guy to watch.
Yeah, it was solid stuff. But I don't know. We opened it up talking about the lack of strength on the undercard. And I guess we'll bring it full circle since we kind of basically went through the entire undercard. I did watch the pre-undercard. And actually, I will say real quick, I forgot about this. I totally forgot about this. But as I was about to order the fight, on the little channel on my cable where you do the ordering, they were actually showing all the preliminary fights. So you didn't have to go to the Top Rank website or anything like that. And,
oh, they were?
I mean, maybe that's new, or I don't know if it's new, or I'd never seen it before.
Damn,
but I thought that was pretty cool
because
it was on HD. Yeah, everything was in HD, and I was sitting there watching it like, oh, all right. And so I got to catch the I can't remember what the first fight was. It was a local fighter, but I can't remember his name offhand. And then the fight right after that, which was right before the paid card started, was the Rexo fight. So... And that didn't last all that long, but in any event, I thought that was kind of cool that they had done that. I don't know if that was like a mistake or a conscious decision or what, but that was cool.
Down for them to do that more often, because those pre-shows are worthless. I mean, they basically just run 24/7 and show the weigh-in and stuff, and that's what was on mine when I ordered it.
That's what's usually on mine. That's why I was a little bit surprised that they had done that, but anyway... Strength of the undercard. There really was no strength to that undercard. And it's not like I was tricked into buying that card. I knew what it was going in. You know, just like most boxing fans know what a card is going in. And when I had made a little post on Queensbury Rules about the show today, I opened it up saying something along the lines of, every so often you go and you buy a card or you watch a card or you become, you know, invested in a card. And it looks great on paper. This fight should be good. That fight should be good, et cetera, et cetera. And it just winds up being shitty. And when that happens, there's nothing you can do. It happens. You know, fights still have to play out in reality. But there are other times when you go into a fight card knowing that it's going to suck. And this is one of those times, and I bought it anyway. And I'm still going to complain about it. Because we need better than that. You know, it doesn't all have to be a stacked card. But if you're going to be charging somebody $70 to watch some fights, they have to be better than that. They just do. There's not really any funny sentence on the end of that. They have to be better.
Yeah, and maybe if Top Rank hadn't spent the money to fly Ellie Sec back to Macau, they could have gotten a better undercard.
That was, yeah. Well,
no, we're kidding. We love that guy. He's a good guy.
Oh, we love him. Well, I'm sure that they spent a whole shitload of money on the production of the rest of the, you know, fight week coverage because, you know, even just watching the pre-fight show, there were all these little, like, well-produced segments where they're, like, walking through Chinese gardens and talking about the fight. Christina Poncher is, like, gracefully floating, you know, across the Venetian lobby talking about all this shit. So they obviously spent money to do all these things, and
like we were talking about last week, it's nice that HBO is, and HBO and Top Rank are having these back-to-back weekends and stuff like that, but it just seems like the money would be better spent to put together a good card.
Yeah, you know, the fucked up thing, Top Rank maybe just doesn't have the fighters. I mean, I can't think of anyone who could have been on this card because the way they spread everything out. It's nice to have a like supporting event. It doesn't always have to be like this. I mean, look, if you just put a good fight as a supporting event, well, we won't complain. But it's also nice when the supporting event can kind of, you know, play into the main event, like create an opponent for the winner of the main event type of situation, get some exposure for somebody. And like, you know, we said, I mean, we'll see Gradovich again, probably because Top Rank has all the featherweights and they'll have the HBO dates next year. You know, we'll probably see Ruiz again as he continues to develop. And, you know, maybe in a year or two, you know, Verdejo will be a factor and he'll be fighting for a, you know, world belt. But there was nothing on here that's of any immediate interest.
I was kind of interested in seeing Felix Verdejo because he's up and coming and, you know, he looks to be a promising fighter, but his opponent I knew nothing about going in. And I mean, even though we came away with a guy that could be kind of funny to watch in the future, you know, from a more quote unquote purist standpoint, if you are going to take that stance, he doesn't really offer the boxing world a whole lot right at this point in time. So, yeah,
well, he's an awesome dude. I mean, I'd love to go get a beer with that guy and with, you know, Provodnikov and Arakawa. I mean, those guys are crazy. I'd love to hang out with those dudes. But, yeah, you don't really want to see Mookie as an opponent or, you know, getting one of the slots on the yet somehow he wasn't even the worst fighter on there because I still have to give that distinction to Tor Hamer because what the fuck was that? Again.
Oh, man. Well, and so, it didn't look like the kicker was he didn't look hurt in the corner. He wasn't really cut. He wasn't swelled up. He wasn't even really breathing that hard. I couldn't even hear him say when they, like, you know, they fucking panned in while he's in the corner. They got the camera 3 inches from his face, and I still couldn't hear anything he was saying. And they're saying, oh, he said I'm done. He said I can't go anymore. I couldn't even hear that. It was like he just checked out. He just didn't want to come out for the next round.
Yeah, I wanted that old guy who was like trying to stick the mouthpiece in Andrew Gallada to make him go back out. I can't remember if that was against Tyson or against Lennox Lewis.
Yeah, Lou Duva.
No, not Lou Duva. There was the other guy who was like Gallada's trainer.
Yeah,
I can't remember his name.
Roger Bloodworth.
Was that him?
Yeah, Roger. I think it was Roger Bloodworth. Because
I thought it was some old
like team of trainers.
Greek guy. But I don't remember when it was. But when he's just like trying, no, you're not fucking quitting, Andrew. You know, and
yeah.
I mean, hey, at least God had been knocked down a few times in that earlier in that, you know, in the round. I mean, with Tamer, yeah, he was barely. I mean, he took a few punches.
And then of course, and he like went to the hospital afterwards, and it turned out he had like a severed nerve in his spine or something like that. So at least in that regard, Gallada had a, you know, at least a semi legitimate. You know, paralysis and whatnot is a semi-legitimate excuse for bowing out of a fight. But that was pretty disgraceful. You know, and we're pretty lenient when it comes to these guys bowing out of fights when they're hurt or not wanting to go on. But that was pretty shitty.
Yeah, it was. It was not like the finest representation of manly valor.
Yeah, not exactly. Well, did you get a chance to watch Carl Froch versus George Groves?
I did.
Thank fucking God.
Of course, man. I'm not going to miss a Froch fight.
I was hoping not. And, you know, I was pretty interested in that going in. And, of course, when we were quote-unquote previewing that last week, I had left all of my notes inside, so I knew, like, none of the details. But, yeah, that actually wound up being a fairly entertaining fight, a surprising fight in a number of ways, and
hell yeah,
controversial, et cetera. Needless to say, the best fight of the weekend, you know, by quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, what was your take on that?
Sure.
What did you think of that stoppage?
I thought the stoppage was terrible. you know, honestly. And I'm a Frotch fan, and I was rooting for him, and I was, you know, surprised. I said this to a friend of mine, you know, I don't think I realized how huge that this fight was in England. You know, I mean, this was a really heavily hyped event, and I think over here in America, we kind of were looking at it as more of like, okay, Frotch is taking a tune-up fight. I mean, we knew Groves, but we didn't consider him to be on the same level, because Frotch has really proven himself against world-class guys, you know, win or lose. But so I was pretty shocked, you know, that right off the bat. I mean, fuck, you know, Frotch has an awesome chin, and Groves catches him in that exchange and hurt him, you know, and Frotch got up and looked like his legs were unsteady, and, you know, luckily there was 10 seconds left in the round. And so right off the bat, I mean, Groves completely exceeded my expectations and was obviously winning the fight early, although I did think that the commentary was a bit one-sided towards Groves. I mean, they were basically giving Frotch credit for nothing throughout the fight. That was one thing I noticed. I mean, but Groves was clearly winning it and, you know, really looked great, and then kind of just, you know, maybe started to gas a little bit, or maybe Frotch just caught him a couple times. But I thought that Frotch was starting to take over and, you know, had him hurt. And I just wanted to see it, you know, play out to its proper conclusion. And I think that Groves 100% deserved the opportunity to, you know, I mean, I thought Frotch was on the verge of stopping him, but I think Groves deserved to prove me wrong. You know, he'd done enough. He was winning the fight. He wasn't even close to being, you know, badly enough hurt where that was justified. I mean, it's one thing if a guy's taking a prolonged beating and then you get an exchange like that and it's just like, okay, enough, you know, you took 2-3 more flush punches, you're done. But that's not what happened at all. I mean, it was like, really, it was like the first time he was like remotely hurt and he took a couple punches, the referee just freaking tackled him. And I don't know what the fuck was going on, you know. And generally speaking, I mean, I think that the best way to judge if a stoppage is good or bad is how the fighter immediately reacts. And right away, Groves put his hands up, like, "What are you doing?" You know, you're conscious enough to do that, I think he deserved the chance to you know, finish that sequence.
You know, just speaking on the last few rounds in particular, it was pretty badly officiated. And, you know, I'll get all up in referees' asses when I don't like them and stuff like that. I personally...
You live in Jane 80's asshole.
I fucking live in that shit because I love to punch that shit from the inside because I hate that guy. But I'm not even all that familiar with Howard Foster. It seems as though he handles a number of bouts in the UK, and I'm not going to lie, I'm not nearly as caught up on the UK scene as I should be, because it's good, the scene, that is. But someone had, oh man, and I really wish I could remember who it was, because I'd like to give him proper credit for bringing it up, but someone had brought up yesterday that they had taken an excerpt of his from that book, The Third Man in the Ring, by Fitzgerald, that was basically, it's just kind of a lumping together of the thoughts of a number of referees. And so Howard Foster, I guess, had offered up a quote for this book where he had said something along the lines of, "If a fighter looks like he's done or if he's on the way to being hurt, I have no problem stopping fight early because I'd rather stop it early than stop it late. I'd be horrified if somebody died, you know, in a fight that I was officiating in." And so I do kind of feel for him in a small way, except for in the rounds immediately, you know, in round 7 and 8 in particular, it looked as though Frotch was kind of full steam ahead and coming on, and George Groves was clearly fading. He was still in the fight, there's no question about that, but he was fading. And there were times when Frotch was kind of getting a hold of him and backing him up to the ropes, and then George Groves was, you know, tangling him up, putting his arms around him, and then the referee was coming up and warning Frotch for doing a whole bunch of shit. It just seemed like a really weirdly officiated bout in those last few rounds. I didn't really understand what the ref was trying to do. And then stepping in early like that was just like, ah, why did you – he robbed both fighters. He robbed, you know, Frotch from getting a potentially clean stoppage. He robbed George Groves from, you know, the chance of coming back and winning rounds like Carl Frotch did early in the fight. It's,
Yeah, it was unfortunate that, because the action itself was good.
Yeah, and you know what? I read that quote too from the book that he had contributed to, and it is kind of a compelling thing that he said, that, you know, and if you take that 100% on the level, then I respect where he's coming from. If that was genuinely, you know, he's in the ring, if he really looked at him, but it's just from the outside perspective, I mean, it really looked like it wouldn't have taken that much longer to just allow that whole sequence to play out, and it didn't seem like Groves would be in that grave of a risk to just let that continue for, you know, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and just see. And if Frotch barrages him with a bunch of clean punches, you jump in. And Groves is probably fine. But, yeah, you want to avoid – I mean, of course you want to avoid a tragedy. But, you know, it is a sport, and I think the competitor deserved the right to, you know, compete with everything that was at stake. I just didn't think it met the criteria to stop the fight. And I think that's pretty much unanimously the decision, you know, the consensus. I haven't seen one person try to defend that stoppage. You know, it was just bad. I mean, it just felt, you know, sometimes sometimes when those things happen, your immediate response is like, what the fuck? And then you see the replay and it, you know, maybe you could see it. Okay. There was, you know, here I didn't see that at all. I mean, I saw a couple,
In the replay, you see the guy drop his hands or, you know, something like that, and you didn't see it in real – yeah, but that didn't happen.
And probably the best example is Corrales Castillo, which seemed weird when it happened, and then immediately you watch the replay, and immediately it's like, oh, shit, like his eyes rolled the back of his head.
Yeah, like you know, damn near unconscious.
Yeah, and I mean, this was just – it's just the way that it happened. I mean, there was a big left hook that kind of, you know, turned Groves' chin, but then he stumbles forward, and it looks like he's – on his feet, has his wits about him, and then the referee just freaking, you know, bear hugs him and, you know, slams him into the ropes. And it was just like, what? Yeah, it was completely unsatisfying, and it does suck for both guys. I think, honestly, though, it probably sucks more for Frotch because I think he was in a good position to win that fight, end that fight, and do it in a really dramatic fashion and you know, much more clearly than the way that he actually did. Whereas Groves, you know, if we're right and Groves was kind of done and on his way out and didn't look like he had much left and was getting badly hurt, I mean, this has made him into kind of a victim. And his stock's not down. I mean, his stock's up because he gave Frotch a really competitive fight. He was winning it. He knocked him down. He was, you know, got robbed of the opportunity to, you know, continue and finish what he started. So I think Groves is fine. I mean, yeah, he's probably upset about the way it happened, but looking back, I mean, the perception of things, Frotch is clearly the one being kind of villainized by this whole, you know, Frotch and the referee. Groves is kind of a hero now, and people, you know, want to see a rematch with Frotch, and Groves has made himself into a viable contender for kind of anybody at 168 now. So I think in a few weeks, I mean, that, the fact that the referee jumped in so early, it probably in the court of public opinion helped George Groves.
It sure seems that way. And, you know, maybe I just didn't realize it or something, but to me, Carl Frotch comes off as a guy that's kind of a dickhead. You know, he just seems like a guy that, you know, he's like the type of guy who would have, like, picked on you in high school or something like that, you know? Well, you know, picked on you, not me, because I didn't get picked on. No, I'm kidding.
Of course.
He just seems like a dude that's kind of a dick, but a likable dick, to me anyway. You know, he seems like a guy that he's kind of funny, but
yeah.
I didn't realize that he seems really hated in the UK. I didn't even realize that. So I agree with you. He certainly comes off worse after
this.
And go ahead, yeah.
Well, I think he can come across as very arrogant. It's just a matter of, do you take it as slightly self-deprecating? I mean, I kind of do. I feel like a lot of what he says is kind of like tongue-in-cheek, and it's that kind of dry wit. But at the same time, he does have a pretty huge ego that shows a lot. And I really like Frotch, but that post-fight interview was just like comically bad as far as, you know, trying to kind of like... You know, at the time, he was lucky to get out. Not lucky, but, like, he was fortunate that the events played out the way that they did, and he basically got the win without having to finish it, even though I think he would have. But, you know, at that point in time, I mean, there was nothing to do but just give George Groves credit for a tough fight.
Yeah.
You know, don't really comment. The PR move, just don't really comment on the referee stoppage. It wasn't, you know, you didn't have anything to do with it. But he just went on and on, like, lecturing for 5 minutes about fucking who knows. And repeating himself over and over again and kind of, like, trying to, like, you know, talk, I think kind of talking down to Groves. It was just bad. It didn't make him endear himself to fans.
Yeah, it wasn't a really good look. And, you know, if you really want to take it from this angle, what would it have hurt for him to just say, you know, that probably wasn't the greatest stoppage. And, you know, if everybody wants a rematch, we'll do a rematch or something like that. And just kind of leave it at that. There's no need to patronize, especially when you're coming off of that. And actually, Carl Froch, I don't know why this caught my eye, but right after the stoppage, his corner runs over and they're lifting him up. And George Groves is, like, pushing the referee off, like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, and you can see him kind of flailing his arms, like, why the hell did you just stop it? And Carl Froch was actually up in the air, had his arms raised, and he was sitting there watching George Groves, like, have a fit. So it's not like he didn't know. It's not like, you know, he went into the post-fight interview thinking that it was a totally clean stoppage. Or maybe he did, but he could definitely see Groves freaking out.
Yeah,
when
he had
even
to have
when
had
they
a
were,
sense.
Like, celebrating. So, you know,
well,
it wouldn't
the way
have
the
hurt
crowd
anything
was responding
for him to
too.
Just, yeah, exactly. And it wouldn't have hurt anything for him to just be like, you know, I would have liked a better stoppage than that, and let's do it again. And that seems to be the prevailing thought of what a lot of people want. They want Groves to get a second crack at that because he did well. And you started out this recap right here saying that pretty much exactly what was on my mind was that the British commentary was fairly slanted towards Groves. And I thought that Carl Froch was doing a lot of things that, you know, they might not have been super obvious. He was landing some really good body shots as Groves was, like, plowing in with some combos. Those were kind of Froch's, that was his way of retaliating, I guess. And those seemed to wear Groves down because by the seventh and eighth rounds, it was pretty clear that Groves was not punching quite as much. He didn't look quite as confident. You know, it looked like he was sliding a little bit in terms of his stamina. So I probably had it scored a little bit closer than most did or most seemed to. So anyway, I wanted to take it back and agree with you with what you started out saying.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So is it a rematch then? Is that what we want?
I think that's probably the best move going forward. I mean, don't you? I don't know. It seems like, yeah, there's some unfinished business, and it was exciting. I mean, it was a really good fight up until the end of it, and it was one of those things where if Groves had gotten a chance and got a second wind, I mean, that was verging into great fight territory because it was back and forth a few times. But yeah, that's probably the move. I mean, I'd like to see, you know, I think Froch has a lot of options that would be interesting. You know, personally, I mean, if he wanted to move forward and not give Groves a rematch, I mean, there's other really good fights for him, I think. But I think it'll do him good to give Groves a rematch. And because of the way things were going, I don't think he should be nervous or afraid of that just because he was having so much trouble early.
Well, I'll put it this way. I would say that there's more unfinished business or more justification for a rematch between Froch and Groves than there is between Froch and Andre Ward.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Because there seems like there's always going to be some talk of, you know, Carl Froch potentially getting back in with Andre Ward. And if that's what it came to, I wouldn't have a problem with that because Carl Froch is good. He's entertaining, you know, and that fight wasn't like a gross, crazy blowout. I didn't think it was close either, but it was enough that I could stomach a rematch if that's what it came to. And Carl Froch has done well enough in the meantime that I would be fine with that. But if it's between the two,
you know, I kind of would like to see George Groves get another shot at that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Frotch knocking out Boutte, who, you know, it seems comical now, but at one point seemed like a guy that Andre Ward wasn't really that eager to get into it with. And Boutte was considered by some, you know, more talented, bigger threat than the guys, you know, who were in the Super Six with Ward. So I think Frotch doing that really kind of gave him a claim that, like, okay, I am the number two guy in the division, and I want a rematch. I want a chance to redeem myself. And then that's fair. You know, it has nothing, no basis in the first fight because it really wasn't close, like you said. It's just that now that this happened, yeah, he's got a little bit, you know, in terms of unfinished business, it's Groves. It's not Andre Ward. But, you know, for his career, I mean, he's going to have to decide what's, you know, what's the best option for him. But it seems like a Grove rematch would be pretty lucrative because I think this was a pretty huge event. And, you know, it was, controversial ending aside, it was pretty successful. And it also left probably a lot of people wanting a rematch. I mean, if you're a Groves fan, of course you want a rematch.
There's pretty much no question. I mean, if anybody is arguing the point I'm about to make, then they're just stupid. Carl Froch has probably the best, like, maybe 10 or so fight schedule of anybody in the sport right now. If you take any fighter in the sport and go back for their last 10 fights, I don't know that anybody has the type of overall quality that Carl Froch has. That said, do you think that that has finally caught up with him? Do you think that that slowed him down finally?
It's just really...
Because he's not young either.
Right, he's older, yeah, mid-30s. And what did we say, he's 36? So
I think he's like 36 or 37, something like that.
It's just hard to say from one fight, you know what I mean? I hate to do that. Obviously, he didn't look as good here. I'm trying to remember, what was Frotch's last fight? Drawing a
his last
blank.
One.
Was that against Yusuf Mack or was it Boutte? There was somebody else that I'm missing.
The one,
but yeah.
Kessler? The Kessler rematch?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, the Kessler rematch.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, he didn't look as good here as he did in that fight, obviously. But I don't think you can look at it and say that, like, the physical decline is that apparent. I mean, that's probably part of it. You know, maybe some of it was that the guy just had kind of an off night. It took a while to get into his rhythm. I mean, he did look a little slower and kind of sloppy and at times, you know, puzzled by what was happening in those first couple rounds. And Groves was just beating him to the punch, landing all the clean punches and kind of outboxing him and, you know, hurt him, which was the most surprising thing. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's anything like beyond just a guy who's older and, you know, has been fighting world class for a while and, you know, had a night where he just didn't look his best. But, you know, Frock, I think he was on his way to getting a clean win and he got the official win anyway. And, you know, that counts for something. I mean, it doesn't take him out of the picture as far as being a tough opponent for any of those guys.
For sure.
In that ballpark. I mean, I'm not as interested in the Andre Ward fight. Love to see them set something big up with Chavez Jr. You know, if Jr. can actually come back and beat Brian Vera without any kind of controversy. And, of course, you know, Golovkin going up against Frotch I think would be awesome. So
yeah,
he has good fights that he can make. But, you know, staying in England and you making a lot of money in a rematch with Groves, that's probably a good next move if they can do that in the spring.
Yeah, that just makes sense to me, really. I mean, in just about every way it makes sense to me. But, yeah, I put Carl Froch in with almost anybody, and I'll watch. I think he's a pretty fun fighter, more often than not. You know, Durrell fight aside, that was fairly putrid. But that also wasn't all Carl Froch, needless to say, because Andre Durrell's been in his fair share of fucking horrible fights.
Yeah.
But, well, shit. Let's, I guess, move on to this coming weekend because we spent more time than I thought. Time always goes by way quicker than I think it's going to on the show. But this coming weekend on HBO, of course, Adonis Superman Stevenson is going to be taking on Tony Bellew in the main event, and then Sergey Kovalev is going to be taking on Ismail Silak on the undercard. So it's going to be an all-light heavyweight affair.
And that's kind of in the wheelhouse of the super middleweights, or at least we had been talking about this, especially after Andre Ward's win over Edwin Rodriguez, and then now Carl Froch's win over George Groves.
Yeah.
Light heavyweights, it's a leap, but it's only one division away. Needless to say, this weekend, I think that there's some potential for these fights to be mismatches, but it's two fighters in Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalev who have proven to be fairly entertaining as far as fighters go. They both have big power, and I guess it looks like there's a possibility that they might be setting them up to be matched together fairly soon, which is good. Tony Bellew, I'm not super-duper familiar with, although I have seen a couple of his fights. I saw his close fight with, of course, now I can't even remember the name, even though I took down the notes. Cleverly. Sorry. I saw a close fight with Cleverly, where he, I believe, lost the split decision. And I don't know. I'm not really convinced that he's going to be all that competitive this weekend. And especially now off the heels of Kovalev absolutely running right through Nathan Cleverly, and I thought Cleverly was going to be able to give him more trouble. And so when you kind of put these all together in an equation, put the puzzle together, I want to see both these guys fight, although I'm a little worried that neither of these fights will be competitive. What are you seeing?
I'm kind of with you on that one. I mean, I think that I think it's awesome what HBO hopefully what is doing here, because this looks like the design is to set up, you know, a fight with Stevenson and Kovalev, which I think everybody would be excited about, you know, and that also creates a great opponent for Andre Ward if he ever decides to go up to 175. That's what this Saturday looks like. I mean, it's pretty clear what the design is. You know, it's for Stevenson and Kovalev to appear on the same card to both get, you know, exciting, you know, knockout wins, keep doing what they're doing, and keep kind of building that buzz. Like, you know, I've only seen Bellew against Cleverly, and, yeah, based on that result, like you said, I mean, you add it all up, Adonis is probably going to be too much for him. I mean, Bellew looks like a tough fighter, and a guy who's going to, you know, come forward and try to kind of put pressure. But the way Stevenson outboxed Cloud, who also I think is also kind of in that vein of kind of walk forward and throw punches, but not a whole lot of, you know, craft or mystery there, you have to favor Stevenson pretty big here. And the fact that he's such a big puncher, too, means that, you know, we're probably likely to end up getting that kind of spectacular finish again. I think the Kovalev-Silak fight is a little bit more intriguing, but it's also tough to ignore what Grachev was able to do against Silak. You know, before that, I mean, Silak looked awesome. He's really quick, you know, good combination puncher. It seemed like he had a little bit of power himself. Against Grachev, my memory is that Silak was outboxing him pretty well and then just got caught with a couple bombs and, you know, eventually knocked out. I can't remember I think it was just like he just got knocked down and then wobbled really badly and they stopped it. But yeah, a guy who's had that happen to him to go up against a big puncher like Kovalev, it's probably a recipe for disaster. But that said, Silak did in the past show some skills as far as boxing ability and his hand speed and all that. And, you know, at one point he was a real kind of hot, you know, prospect to watch. So, you know, maybe he can do some stuff and make it interesting and you know, give Kovalev a little bit of trouble. And that would definitely be, you know, something to watch, because we haven't seen that. I mean, Kovalev basically has blown through the guys Cleverly and Campillo, who he fought. And I think Cleverly was a good fighter and Campillo was a really good fighter. But I guess there's still some unknown, because we haven't really seen, you know, can he deal with adversity? What happens when he finds somebody who's, you know, can outbox him? And maybe Silak is quick enough to do that. So I think that's the fight that I'm more interested in from a potentially, like, competitive standpoint. But if all goes according to plan, I mean, you're setting up a hell of a matchup with Kovalev and Stevenson, you know, sometime next year.
Yeah, bombs away, for sure. I mean, it's kind of weird, because we have a situation where Adonis Stevenson in his last fight against Tavoris Cloud, you know, a lot of us expected that fight to be bombs away, but
I think that the combination of Tavoris Cloud just, you know, not being nearly skilled enough to really compete with a guy who can pretty much do anything other than come forward and throw is was one factor in that. But also, even if you set that, you know, kind of take that into consideration, that is, if you take that into consideration that Tavoris Cloud perhaps isn't that good, even so, I thought that Adonis Stevenson, he looked a little bit surprising in what he was able to do skill-wise against Tavoris Cloud. And so I think that's another extra element to this because I've seen, I did actually do a little bit of research because I was like, all right, well, what is the prevailing thought in the UK about what Tony Bellew is able to do? And it seemed to me like the prevailing thought was, oh, well, he has a real good chance of outboxing Adonis Stevenson. So I went and looked, and I was like, all right, well, what is he doing that makes them think he'll outbox them? And I just wasn't really seeing it. He doesn't really seem that sharp to me. He seems like he's not exactly averse to getting inside and tussling, clinching. And I remember, you know, the Cleverly fight, it wasn't really all that entertaining either. So I'm just not really seeing that he'll be able to compete with Adonis Stevenson in almost any way, and especially if he starts getting hit with those shots. Adonis Stevenson has obviously showed some serious power. But, yeah, I'm not very confident in Tony Bellew, needless to say. As far as Kovalev goes, he's one of those kind of Golovkin slash Matisse type of guys who's bombing guys out but doing it with skills, you know, not just kind of cavemanning guys out of there. And I like that about him. I like that he gets knockouts, but I also like the fact that he's not doing it like a tough man, you know, competitor. So it's kind of nice to see a guy doing that. And then, like you said, Ismail Salak, he has a really awkward style. I think that that was one of the things that really made me take a second look at him. His style is just really, really weird because he's gangly and he moves kind of funny, and his defense is like the type of defense where he makes you miss and moves his head so wide that it almost looks just off. It looks like he's breaking so many rules when he's fighting, but he does look like he has a chin problem against Grachev, and Denis Grachev can punch, but even against him, you know, it looked like he got hit with a shot and just never recovered from it. I think it was he got hurt, and then the very next round he got stopped. But, yeah, the potential between a Stevenson and Kovalev matchup is enough to kind of get me through this card and think, all right, well, hopefully both these guys can do what, you know, they're quote-unquote supposed to do, and hopefully they're able to match them in the near future because both of them are exciting guys from what we've seen so far.
Oh yeah, definitely, and that fight. I mean, and I think you got it. We had a better picture of how that fight might actually look with the way that Adonis boxed against Cloud, because Kovalev basically just comes forward. If they fight, you can kind of see how that's going to play out. I mean, we're getting a little, you know, premature now, but after this weekend, it's a great matchup. I mean, it's the best you could ask for at light heavyweight.
Yeah, I would say currently it is. So, yeah, it's intriguing, at least in that regard, that, you know, we could be getting something fairly big coming out of
and,
it.
Hey, and then B-Hop lures the winner over to Showtime and beats him and becomes the legit champion at 53 or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, and the messed up thing is I could definitely see that happening. That's not even remotely outside the realm of possibility.
Probably will.
Not even close. So, yeah, hopefully that is not the case because I do not want to see that. I don't want to see any more humping or elbowing or hip shots or fucking the guy's walking away from him and he leaps over and hits him in the back of the head. And then Steve Smoger's like, oh, poor baby, B-Hop, are you okay? I don't want to see this anymore.
Smoger needs to referee that fight if it does happen.
At this point, Smoger needs to referee every fight. Just let him referee them all.
At least he wouldn't have stopped Groves and Frotch.
Yeah, there's no way he would have stopped that. Yeah, that's one thing I will give him, is that he does seem to be fairly spot on more often than not about when a fight should be stopped. I mean, he lets things go, but, you know, I can't remember any specific instances where he totally screwed the pooch and stopped the fight way late.
He hates stopping fights. I remember at the Cotto Margarito rematch. I mean, he basically was just like, you know, holding Margarito's head in his hands, like sobbing, apologizing for having to stop it. You know, he's like, the doc's making me do it. He's like, Doc, you sure? You sure?
Give him a chance.
Yeah.
Man, Smoger.
So sometimes that's good. I mean, it all depends on who's fighting, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And it was crabby to see him put in such a shitty performance in the Hopkins-Murat fight, because normally I like the guy. Well, yeah.
Shitty, but it was also comic genius.
Yeah,
sometimes
it was.
That outweighs the other stuff.
Yeah, it definitely gave me a little bit of fuel for a few days, needless to say.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh,
go ahead.
Antonio Tarver's fighting again, buddy.
I know, man. I actually have like a countdown clock on my wall for later tonight. Want to make sure I'm ready for it.
Hell yeah, buddy. Are we getting... Is tonight going to... I mean, forget Antonio Tarver. What I want to know is tonight going to mark the triumphant return of Castle Chalice?
That's a great question. I don't, you know, those Fox Sports 1 guys are really screwing the pooch. I mean, they have a major talent on their hands, you know, broadcasting talent, and they're just, what the fuck? I mean, he comes on once, rave reviews, you know, the talk of the town, and I haven't seen him since. I think he's doing, like, you know, high school football games or something on Fox Sports 3. Yeah, it's we need more Castle Chalice in our lives.
We do. This is kind of bullshit. He fell off the face of the planet. I want to know.
And I probably will try to catch it later tonight, just because it's, I don't fucking know. Maybe they'll interview Adrian Broner or something. But you know, I mean, it's just kind of sad.
I got nothing, really. I mean...
Yeah, I never really liked Tarver in his prime, and I don't really like, you know, any fighters at this far past their primes. So, I'd rather watch Roy Jones, Bobby Gunn, to be honest with you, because at least that would just be so cartoonishly bad that maybe, you know, it would be funny, but this is just like, I don't know. What are they doing? Is Tarver going to fight Deontay Wilder? I mean, what's the plan from Golden Boy?
I don't even know. I mean, he just doesn't even remotely look like a heavyweight at all. You know, so I don't really know exactly what the plan is, although I know that they want to, or at least from what little I've read, they're going to keep him at heavyweight, and he wants to try to compete there, but, I mean, what? I don't know, dude.
Well, I heard HBO is interested in the Tarver Coyote rematch. That's the one fight that they'll break the Golden Boy fighters rule for.
Well, he fuck he up.
He did. He did.
He fuck he up, buddy.
Speaking of people we don't know where the hell they are, has anyone heard from Latif Coyote in the last couple of years?
No, have not at all. Man, that whole thing was a debacle. That's exactly like you look up debacle in the dictionary, and there's a picture of Latif Coyote in a little bubble coming up, going over and saying, "I fuck he up."
Yeah, debacle. And actually, that interview was the most entertaining thing of that whole card. I don't know if you remember that, but that was like the first Showtime quadruple header, and every fight sucked. They had like the Austin Trout Delvin Rodriguez fight, and then some other shit. But actually, the Tarver Coyote fight was like probably the best fight, but the post-fight interview was just amazing.
I was going to see it live just because it was going to be a relatively short drive, and it was, you know, the StubHub Center, and it looked like, you know, there were names on the card, so I was like, oh, well, you know, maybe could be worthwhile. But then when they started putting the card together, it became clear that I just didn't really want to take time to go see that live. That's pretty much what it came down to. I didn't want to take the time to do it.
Yeah. And that was a wise decision. I think that was called, like, forewarned or something. The number four, a play on the fact that there were four televised fights. It had something like that. Another one of the Golden Boy genius titles.
Yeah, punny as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, punny as hell.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
It was bad. Well, shit, what's the other news? What, there was something else I was going to say. Oh, yeah, Jermaine Taylor's making his comeback. We briefly discussed that last week, but Yeah, I guess that's official now. And then somebody said something about Jeff Lacy also making a comeback.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, well, you know, it's Jermaine Taylor, man. It's just sad because obviously the guy probably needs money that he's continuing to do this. And, you know, he was an exciting fighter before. I mean, I liked him when he was in his prime, even though how good he was, I mean, that's kind of debatable. You know, he was kind of on the fortunate side of a few decisions. But you know, the first fight with Kelly Pavlik was awesome. And, you know, he was just a likable figure from that kind of that era of boxing in the mid-2000s. And it's just, you know, he last few years hasn't been able to get in the ring without getting brutally knocked out. And it almost happened to him in that fight last year where he was obviously, I mean, he was, you know, concussed and just raving in his post-fight interview. And, you know, things like that. I mean, we do bask in kind of the black, you know, the dark comedy of the sport. And Latif Coyote's post-fight interview, I mean, that was in his mind serious, but for us it was hilarious because, you know, it was so insane. But something like Jermaine Taylor's interview where he was, you know, raving about getting up from the knockdown and all that, it wasn't, I know some people laughed at it, but for me it was just disturbing, you know, because you just see he's just not right, and he's going to get hurt if he fight. I mean, he might be able to, he could probably still beat a lot of like journeyman type guys and, you know, but if he does this against the wrong opponent, I mean, he's going to get seriously hurt again and he shouldn't be fighting, you know?
Well, it was just, Jermaine Taylor has just such a terrible reputation, especially late in fights. I mean, you know, in the first Bernard Hopkins fight, he was basically turning his back and running away, you know, in the middle of the round, in the 12th round, because Hopkins was, like, smacking the shit out of him. And then, you know, of course, the Carl Froch fight, it was a late knockout, and then Arthur Abraham, late knockout.
Yep.
You know, even aside from all that stuff, yeah, dude, I laughed at the interview because it was crazy. And I was sitting there watching it going, like, this guy is a lunatic. And then, of course, you know, after it set in, I was like, now that was just sad. You know, now I just feel bad for laughing at him because, okay, you know, he just got the shit banged out of him, and now he's, like, delusional to think that, you know, this was a good mark. Past even just the physicality of it and him getting knocked out, he did it against a guy that he probably would have laid waste to in 2004, 2005. So, you know, looking at that, it's just like, fuck, somebody help this guy out. Somebody help this guy out so he doesn't have to fight or something, because I don't want to see that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the sad part of it. You know, it's like Juan Manuel Lopez was all fucked up and saying all the crazy shit about the referee gambling, and that was basically a similar situation, a guy who was badly hurt and not right in the head, spouting crazy shit. But that was kind of funny just because of what he was saying, you know. But it's like with Taylor, it's that this guy who was, like, formerly, like, you know, the HBO's, like, next biggest star, and he actually was, like, the middleweight champion and was in some big fights, that he's here, you know, elated because he survived the knockdown from basically, like, a journeyman, even though I think it was against Caleb Truax, who's not a big fighter. You know, he's a decent, like, tough guy fighter, but he's not somebody who's, you know, if you were the middleweight champion, the legit guy, if you even hung with Hopkins close enough to make it, you know, to have a case for winning those fights, you shouldn't be bragging about surviving a knockdown from Caleb Truax.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. Yeah, it was just sad to kind of see. And plus, the guy's had, like, neurological problems. Like, didn't he have, like, bleeding in his brain, and that's why he took so much time off? And it just, you read about stuff like that, and just, yeah,
I know that Lou DiBella, that was part of the reason why he was, you know, encouraging him to not fight anymore, because he was like, well, you know, dude, you're getting blasted late in fights, and you're finishing these fights not only knocked out but beat up too. Just stop. So I don't really know what the situation is, and if he is fighting for money, which I'm sure he is. Yeah, I mean, on whatever, past any comedic level, I feel bad for the guy.
Agreed.
So, yeah. Well, shit, we got about a minute and a half left. You want to wrap this shit up fully?
Yes, I think we should.
Well, then let's wrap this up. All right. Well, everybody who tuned in,
thank you so much for tuning in once more. Hopefully we made this worth your while, and hopefully we have a good set of fights this weekend. Whatever you do, don't watch the Antonio Tarver fight tonight. I'm kidding. You didn't hear that from me. All right, everybody. Well, check out James Foley's work at badlefthook.com. Check out the stuff that I do at queensburyrules.com, and we will see you guys next week. Take it easy.